Welcome to Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. I'm Phil McKenzie.
I'm Michael Brooks.
On Point is where we highlight someone getting it right, and we're joined today by Kane Sarhan, head of brand at SH Group. How's it going, man?
It's going well. Can't complain.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't you start off with the simple stuff? Like, give us an idea of SH Group for those who are not familiar. And I left it sort of vague and innocuous because I think the way your company is structured and what you're focused on in particular is pretty interesting. So kind of give all of our listeners kind of a overview.
Yeah, totally. So SH Group is a brand no one's ever heard of, and that's almost intentional. It's founded by this guy named Barry Sternlicht. Only sort of the real estate and hotel dorks amongst the world will know his name in recognition, but he is the founder and was the CEO and the founder of a company that you've probably all heard of called Starwood Hotels and Resorts. Barry founded Starwood at the young age of 30 years old. And Starwood grew out of a company that he's still the CEO of and still runs that I work for, our holding company called Starwood Capital Group, which is a big, giant, $60 billion real estate hedge fund. And while Barry is a notorious deal guy and financier and a legend in really the real estate and finance space, his true passion and love actually lies in design, and specifically in hotel design. So Barry is the creator of a hotel brand called W Hotels, and he created W Hotels and created Starwood Hotels, Sheraton, Westin, St. Regis, Aloft, all brands that you've probably heard of that he was the founder and CEO of. He ran that company for many years, and SH Group is actually his new hotel management company. So it's his round two of Starwood Hotels and Resorts. Starwood Hotels and Resorts was a merger of a bunch of other big companies. It was like he bought Sheraton, he bought Westin, he put them together. Whereas SH Group, he intentionally decided to build from the bottom up. So it's all intents and purposes a startup that's financed by a big PE fund, but a startup. And SH Group is the owner and the manager of two new hotel brands. One is Baccarat Hotels, which is an ultra-luxury hotel. First hotel was opened in New York City that is designed and is a shared brand sister to Baccarat Crystal, which is a 250-year-old crystal brand. And then the second hotel brand, which was really where Barry's personal passion and where my passion lies, is One Hotels. One Hotels is a new hotel brand we launched in 2015. We currently have three locations. Our flagship location right here in Brooklyn, on the waterfront on Brooklyn Bridge Park, Central Park location about 100 steps from the park on 58th and 6th, and a resort location in South Beach, right on South Beach on Collins Avenue. So I am the head of brand, which means that I oversee our brands and the brands that we develop and the brands that we own, and sort of am, for all intents and purposes, I say my real job is like the great explainer and the great negotiator. I sit between the four pillars of our business: asset management, the money guys; operations, the people who run our hotels; design, the people who design them and make them beautiful; and marketing, the people who sell them. And it's my job to make sure not only that everyone plays nice, but to develop the high-level strategy that defines how each one of them does their jobs. So as sort of the protector, the creator, and the protector of our brands, to keep everyone on track and working together.
How do you manage that process when, even from what you've explained, the chief hotels, like, you know, I came to this from the One Hotel side of the equation, and then you mentioned the Baccarat brand as well. Like, those seem to be very distinct and unique brand propositions. How do you get all of those things working in concert to kind of serve an overall strategy?
Totally, yeah. So it starts with having a boss and a CEO who believes that brand is everything, right? So what's great about the brands that we have is Baccarat and One Hotel are very different, and they're respected for being different, and they each have a very unique point of view. They each have a very unique positioning. They have core beliefs and principles that each brand has that are really the guiding lights and the framework that guides every decision that we make. So a lot of it started with really taking the time and investing, especially on the One Hotel side. Baccarat is a 250-year-old brand. It was started by King Louis XIV. It's been made in Baccarat, France, in a factory that's like literally hand-blown crystal for 250 years. it has such a strong brand DNA, like you just have no choice but to like get in line and follow like the French and what they say it is. Whereas like One Hotels, we spent months and really on Barry's side, he spent years really thinking about it. And I spent almost a solid year taking what was in his head and translating that into a vision, a mission, really strong brand pillars, really strong like brand promises, that took a lot of time and effort and was a really ugly, painful process, but has allowed a really solid framework that makes it really easy to make decisions and makes it really easy to sort of guide strategically where your brand is going to go.
Do you think one of the things that we talk a lot about in all of our work is the sort of distinction between value communities versus demographics? And we're interested in, obviously demographics matter, but there's different alliances that are made, whether we're talking about in terms of entertainment or consumption or politics or, you know, many different things that can link different people that are not, you know, if you're just thinking those kind of lazy demographic terms. So people, you know, across racial, sexual, economic boundaries can align because I don't, you know, they care about an environmental concern as an example, or they, you know, share a devotion to a band. So when you're formulating these different brand propositions, and it's interesting because all of the different brands you're talking about, there's different ways of understanding what luxury is and what luxury means to different people. So that's one thing. There's different priorities. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, the ecology of the hotels, the experience of the hotels. And I'm just wondering that kind of contrast between and linkage between demographics and value communities and how that plays into your thinking and formulating these different brands.
Totally. So like One Hotels, for example, it actually was founded on an assumption that goes to exactly what you were saying, and that we believed that people would pay more and would choose to stay at a hotel that was sustainable and eco-friendly because they saw that as a way to brand themselves personally. Mm-hmm. And that that was something that was a core belief system that they had, was a core priority for them. And no matter their race or their household, I mean, there's a level of household income because it's a luxury product,
right.
But
right.
I mean, that's a factor. But right. Even if they don't choose to stay there, they choose to aspirationally follow it, or one day they're going to, or they choose to work there, right? Like right. If they don't stay there, they choose to work there, or they choose to go have a drink there or right. to buy a meal there because they believe in the same core philosophies that we do. So we actually, our core philosophy and in building the brand, the biggest assumption was we believe if we build a truly authentic, sustainable hotel brand, people will choose to stay here over our competitors. They'll choose to pay more, they'll choose to come back more often, and they'll be more loyal to us because they know that we share the same belief system that they do. And that's 100% panned out. And it's our strongest, I actually get chills talking to you about it still to this day, because it's sort of one of the things that like still gives me like belief in humanity as people, and that like we will always come around a common cause. We will, like, those who believe in something will put their money behind it. They will support it even in the smallest way of choosing where to stay at a hotel. But we've seen the success and the growth of the brand, how fast it's grown. I mean, we're now building 8 new One Hotels. We've opened 3. We're building 8. We have a pipeline of people asking us to build them that we're not wanting to fill that fast. Like, the demand is so high. And it's because consumers want to spend money with brands and with companies that they relate to and that they believe in and that they know share the same philosophies that they do.
Culture in, culture out. That's Chuck Welch.
Yeah.
That's a Chuck Welch line.
Yeah.
Chuck Welch. Real. Shout out to Chuck Welch.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's interesting you talk about that value proposition, building that community. And in your earlier question, you alluded to the process from going from ideation to formation was a difficult one. But now it seems to be paying off. Like, what are some of those challenges that you guys had when you have the initial idea and you're starting to ruminate that and think about it, like even the choice of building the space in Brooklyn, like how did all of that factor in to get to a point where now it's growing even faster than you guys are even willing to take on the back end?
So a lot of it's trial and error, right? Like there's a lot of trial and error that comes with stuff like that. There's, you know, it's interesting. You can do as much market research as you want. You can ask as much questions, but people will never tell you how they feel or how much they're willing to spend for anything, right? Like they always, you know, that like if you ask someone how much they'll spend for something, like that data is almost always false. If you ask them like their emotional response to something, that data also has like a lot of falses in it. So a lot of it comes with trial and error. For us, what was really great is we were lucky enough to have a situation to where our boss and our CEO was willing to spend the dollars, spend the time, and allow for the creative process to create something truly, truly special, and knew that that wasn't something that was going to be super efficient in the first couple, right? He knew it going into it. We knew it was going to be a lot of trial and error and discovery and good, bad, and ugly. So you had someone who was patient. Most people would never describe Barry as patient because he's just such a titan, but he had a level of patience and a level of, more than patience, a level of conviction over what his great, like in his head and what his aspirations were, that he wasn't willing to compromise, right? So he was willing to go through that iteration and he was willing to do what we had to do to make it right. None of our hotels are perfect. There's always things we could have done better from a design perspective.
Oh, they're not perfect?
They're not perfect, oh, then unfortunately.
We should probably wrap. We should wrap this up.
No, I'm
sorry. Yeah, sorry. I mean, that's a little awkward, but I think you know. You could just show yourself out.
The door's right there.
The door is right there.
Can I take the Coke with me before I go? Coca-Cola with me before I go.
No and no. You can, the complimentary Coke is withdrawn. Please take it out of your nose.
Rude.
Very rude. Do you think it's interesting, though? I want to kind of further expand on that. Another notion that we're always sort of banging on about is long-term thinking and the ability, especially if you're in any type of culture space that involves business, that the sort of tyranny of like Wall Street speed and finance cycles as applied to propositions that are fundamentally cultural and fundamentally far more organic and are not going to be, you know, you're talking about even just with market research, it just doesn't work the same way in terms of kind of eliciting the information that you want from the people you're speaking to, and then the reality that they're going to respond and engage with you in thousands of unanticipated ways. You've already spoken to it, but I want you to really zero in on the importance of the willingness of leadership to not be on like that speed adrenaline and anxiety cycle and recognize that trial and error, failure, time, long-term planning is indispensable to any kind of proposition that involves cultural engagement.
Totally. And it's really, really freaking hard, right? Yeah. Especially like for us as an organization, like we're an investment fund, right? So our investors are expecting returns on the assets that we're buying and we're building. And like, you know, is every delay that we have on construction or on fabricating something is a direct benefit to our investors, right? And then returning their capital with the best value or best return we can in the shortest amount of time. So it's really, really hard. What I think is interesting is I think that, the most important side of it for me is that, and I think what is the most convincing for people in that, I think it's hard to convince them with numbers, right? It's hard to convince them with, you know, you can't change 250 years of industrial business principles overnight by talking about it. Just because it's how our economy's built, it's how our country's built. It's, you know, Wall Street is yes, but it started with, you know, factory workers, right? And the most output you can get in an hour with the least amount of people is how you measure and value work. And I actually have a friend who's writing a book about this whole thing, and she talks about this idea of hustle and float. Shout out to you, Rahaf, if you ever hear this. She talks about this now that we're in a creative economy. And it comes from a kayaking term, actually, where when you're like whitewater rafting or kayaking, you have a point of hustle, which is like the stream has like calmed down. So you have to paddle, you have to work. And then when the rapids pick you up, you're actually floating. And like to hustle during a float period, to try to paddle during a float period actually hurts you more, right, and like can cause danger. So She has this whole idea of, like, as a creative economy or in cultural situations, you have to be willing to hustle and float. You have to, you know, one, hotels, it's interesting, like, we're at a point now where the reason where we have the hustle now is that culture's at our back, right? Society's at our back. People are talking about the things that we're talking about. They're marching on the streets because of climate change. It's not just Al Gore talking to himself like it was even maybe 10 years ago. You know, everyone and anyone, you know, is getting behind this. And so what I've sort of realized is the biggest and easiest explanation and the reason why is that if you try to force it, if you're not willing to be patient, if you're not willing to listen, if you're not willing to understand that it takes trial and error, your results will be inauthentic. And in today's world, consumers aren't just, they don't just have amazing bullshit meters. They are actually looking for opportunities to catch people trying to fool them.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's right. There's so much information out there, and there's so much. Transparency is at an all-time high, whether you like it or not, because of the world that we live in, that consumers have zero patience for it. And so pushing and not being willing to invest the time, energy, resources, and doing something right, I think is a, not just is it not long-term thinking, but it creates a short-term, authentic, inauthentic result that customers won't respond to, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's where you really got to think about, you know, the society we live in today and like and just what consumers are expecting from the people that they spend money with and from the brands that they dedicate themselves to.
Yeah, I mean, related to that, I think that the kind of another wave that's coming is people are very concerned about, you know, there's very much the ecological and environmental dimension. And I think people are interested increasingly in the inner, you know, ecology of the organization. What are people paid like? How do they make a living? You know, what, how are your employees actually experiencing, you know, work in terms of concrete benefits, things like that. So
exactly.
You know, that's another aspect of the ecology.
Yeah. And we've thought about that a lot too, in that, you know, one of the early things we wanted to do and we thought of as a brand is that, you know, a lot of brands create these amazing experiences, or outlets or venues or perks for their consumers or for their customers. And when we did that, we really, very early on, we said, you know, if we're doing amazing things like for our guests and, you know, we have amazing fitness programs for them or we have really awesome food and beverage that they love, like those exact things need to be reflected for our team members as
right,
well.
Right, right,
like
right.
We, you know, so right. our cafeteria at our hotels for our employees, the food that they eat is similar to the menus that we serve our guests, right? The clothing that they wear, their uniforms are 100% organic cotton and they're designed to feel like streetwear and be on trend so that they feel cool and comfortable and excited to put them on and not dreading being put into something right, that like right. separates them from the people that they're serving,
right?
Right? And they have their own wellness programming that they can go to for free. And they have, so just really being full circle. And, you know, if you say you believe in these things and if you create these experiences or market yourself to folks as someone who believes in these things, like the most fundamental thing you need to do is provide them to the people that work with you every day.
That's right. And everybody's watching you.
Yeah.
Oh,
at,
totally.
And, at all times.
And people apply
times.
And people come for that. You
right.
know what I mean? It attracts better talent. It, you know, biggest takeaway I've had in everything I've ever done is like, talent is the most important thing, right? Like good people who care about what you care about, who are willing to put their blood, sweat, and tears into your business or into anything you're building. Without that, you're nothing.
Right.
And that too goes back to like, if you create something inauthentic, you're not going to attract the right people. Like they're not going to want to come work for you. You're just going to have like a bunch of like hanger oners and swagger jackers who like are trying to
swagger
work
jackers.
With you.
I like that one.
Jackers.
Swagger
yeah.
jackers.
And it's interesting because I think the hotel business, hospitality business, if you want to combine the entire experience, it has been under a lot of pressure. There's new players. There's the Airbnbs that are taking away market share and opportunity. But when you build this something that seems more holistic, it seems like there's a marketed decision to move to make a distinction between those other players and still offer community and something that's going to be special.
100%. It's one of the biggest things. Before I worked in hotels, I did my tour of like working in tech startups, and I would never say call myself a technologist, but whenever I hear people in the hotel world or hospitality industry talking about how they're going to create like an Airbnb killer, or like this hotel is like the like answer to Airbnb because it has like kitchens and like the lobby has like, wow, you know, a cool living room hangout thing.
That's incredible.
It drives me absolutely crazy because I'm like, you fundamentally don't understand that Airbnb is a platform. You know what I mean? It's not about the assets. Right. It's about the technology and the technology that they built that allow anyone to use to monetize what they currently own. So it's a, for me, where I think, you know, in the hotel space, and you hit it on the head, is the way that you compete, is not trying to out Airbnb. We're in two completely different businesses. We're building two completely different businesses. It's to create authentic, amazing experiences, that attract a certain type of consumer that make them choose to want to stay with you instead of an Airbnb. Right, that draw them as a loyal consumer. You know what I mean? There's 1,000 different shoe companies out there, right? And there's a reason why Nike is unbeatable. Their shoes aren't made better. They are not, the design isn't necessarily that much different from other shoes that are out there. There's only so many ways you can make a damn sneaker. It's the brand that they built, right? And what it means to put on a pair of Nikes and how it feels to put on a pair of Nikes and who else is putting on a pair of Nikes and what do they feel about them and what stories can be told with them and what memories come from wearing them and all of that, right? And so I really, you know, I think in the competitive hotel landscape, you're going to see a lot of consolidation. Like, you know, Marriott owns Starwood Hotels now because with that comes operational efficiency and money savings. So that's one way to win is consolidate, make yourself bigger, get the operational efficiency, save money, increase your margins, et cetera. And then the other way is, and the way that I think we're more interested in approaching it, is just create a really great brand and create a really unique experience and be the best at what you do. And the customers who want to stay with you and who believe in what you believe in and who are loyal, who either discover your brand or have discovered your brand and remain loyal, will keep you in business and will help you thrive.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah. We were talking about this earlier, but the amount of noise and just like information that's flying around all the time, staying in your lane and knowing what you care about and investing in what you say, like investing in that, you know, we say we are this, this is who we are, this is what we're trying to build, and staying true to that every day is hard because there's always a new opportunity or there's always some article or someone else is doing this and they're doing that. And so, you know, that anxiety builds up in anyone, and like, oh wait, should we be doing that? Or, oh wait, should we be doing this? Or should our strategy change? Or, you know, should we be investing here now because this person is? And that's a dangerous road to me. It's like,
how do you keep out all of that noise? How do you keep out of all of that anxiety? Because it sounds in the design process and the ideation process, there was a level of, we're going to stick to our guns and build it and they'll come. Now you have it. How do you keep out all of that clutter that is so much a part of this? Because like you said, we were talking a little bit about this before we got on mic, like that attention deficits are real and they're a challenge.
Yeah. So it's about finding a balance, right? So, you know, one of our brand pillars from One Hotels is actually everyone is evolving, right? And that we actually have a mandate as a brand and as a company to constantly have an appetite for and embrace evolution as a business and as a brand. And that really comes from, you know, we say everything we do is inspired by nature, but that comes from literally the nature that surrounds us. Nature is in a constant state of evolution. You know what I mean? It's in a constant state of trying to achieve homeostasis. Our bodies are in a constant state of evolution. You're constantly chasing that perfect balance, which never happens and is actually impossible. But so we as a brand are super open and encourage any member of our team and all of us to constantly be pushing to evolve, to do things better, to make things better. But that evolution needs to be informed. So it needs to be data informed. It needs to have some learnings with it. And that evolution needs to stay within the guidelines of who we say we are as a brand and what we care about. So when you encourage evolution, but put up a little bit of guardrails, just like in the creative process, like I have always done my best work if I have some constraints, be it like money or time or location, right? A little bit of constraints, I think, in the creative process is often more helpful than harmful. So we sort of have this culture of evolution, but we have these guardrails that are inflexible, that are unchangeable, that will never go away, that are who we are. And they're not specific mandates of like, you know, our rooms have this specific TV or this specific technology. They're mandates around, you know, we believe any technology that we put into our hotels has to have a purpose that either makes service better or makes it easier for our guests to not have to use technology. So like it either is an enhancer to service and makes it easier and more efficient for us to deliver our jobs, or it enhances the guest experience where it makes it easier for them to get done what they need to get done so that they can actually disconnect and get away from it. So that could mean we put an Alexa or a Google Home in our rooms because it enables voice activation and allows them to do that. It could mean that, you know, our TVs have Chromecast in them, or they're smart TVs, or I mean, it could be a bunch of different things. But we're never going to just put technology in for technology's sake because we think our competitors are doing it. If it doesn't fit this mandate or this belief around why it's there, we're not going to do it, or we're going to find the solution that does. And I think it's those are the things that are, there's so much noise and there's so much, it's almost like a, it's so funny. I always say to my friend, I always say, whenever we do an event for our hotels, I'm always like, well, what if no one shows up? And my team always jokes with me. They're like, did you have a birthday party when you were like 9 that like no one showed up to your birthday party?
Did you?
No, I didn't. Okay, that's good. The thing. That's I've never had the whole
brokenhearted if that was true.
It's never actually happened.
Okay, good.
But there's something, there's this level of like, I don't know, paranoia is probably not the right word, but there's this level where like, I'm just like, what if no one shows up?
There's always apprehension.
Yeah.
There's always apprehension. And the people always show up and they're, and you know, 9.5 times out of 10, they're great. You know, there can be little duds there, here or there. But I think that same feeling translates to a lot of people just in business in general of like, what if I'm behind? Yeah. What if I'm not keeping up? What if I'm making the wrong choice? And with the amount, how easy it is to get on the internet, how easy it is to check out your competitors, how easy it is to stalk anyone. You know what I mean? Yep. We used to talk about Facebook stalking or Instagram stalking just on like a crush or like someone you wanted to know about. I Facebook stalk my competitors. You know what I mean? I Instagram stalk them. You know what I mean? Like I have Google alerts for their names. And that's like a level of almost, and I've had to make sure that I know that I do that to stay informed, to collect data. I don't do it to determine what strategy I'm going to put in place, right? You can't be reactive, you know what I mean, in that sense.
Brother. Makes sense. Perfect.
Yeah, we covered a lot of good stuff.
Great.
I mean, I think I was really excited, like I said, to have you come in because the space is an amazing space. It's in Brooklyn. It's in our home territory.
Our home environment.
Maybe about 10 minutes away, 12 minutes away if you're walking at a brisk pace. So, you know, we want to thank you again for coming in studio with us. And that's On Point.
On Point.